We've always been very adamant about transparent pricing. We have had a very, very strict no discount policy. Like everyone, all of our customers pay exactly the same price, rather regardless if you have 2 licenses or 20,000 licenses, if we have the same investors, if you do a customer story with us, like whatever it is, we don't do discounts. Everyone pays the same price. So we wrote an article about why we did this. If you Google Chili Piper no discounts, I think you can find the article. But the TLDR is that, one, we wanted to make it easy as possible for buyers to inform themselves prior to the call. So we want people to self-qualify themselves out if they can't afford this. Like if your budget for calendar solutions is like $50 a year, Chili Piper is not it. Like we want you to be able to look at it, kind of get like a ballpark, like understand what the pricing is before you go into a sales call to decide even if a sales call makes sense. And two, it's
Hey everyone, welcome back to Product Marketing Life, the show where we sit down with everyday product marketers to talk life, career, and most importantly, product marketing. My name is Colin Majak. I'm lead PMM at Classy from GoFundMe. And in this episode, I got a chance to sit down with Madeline Work. Madeline is the product marketing manager at Chili Piper. And we had a really fun conversation. We dove deep on Chili Piper's repositioning and all the kind of hurdles that come with going from a single product org or a company that's known for a single product into a platform and a platform position in the market. We also went really deep on Chili Piper's choice to go all in on transparent pricing, the pros, the cons, and all the work that comes with it. I really enjoyed this conversation with Madeline, and I think you will too. Enjoy the episode. Madeline, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Now, you are my third guest from Portland, Oregon. So,
wow.
Andy McCotter-Bicknell, technically Vancouver, but like Portland enough.
Jason.
And then Emma Stratton is, I think, in Tigard. She can correct me. And now, are you in Portland proper?
I'm in Beaverton.
Okay. So like in the area. And so I asked both of them this question, and now I feel like it's become an obligation to ask anyone from Portland. Do you have a favorite restaurant in Portland? Because I feel like it's the most underrated food city. And I think the food seems incredible there. Do you have a favorite or a go-to restaurant you'd recommend someone?
I have a lot of favorite restaurants. It's really hard to choose just one. I really like XLB in, I think it's in Northeast. Okay. It's like they only have like 8 items on their menu, but they're all really good. It's like Chinese kind of fusion-y food, but my husband's Taiwanese, and that's where we usually go for xiaolongbao.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they were opening up a location at one point in Northwest as well, but I didn't actually get a chance to go, but I miss Portland's food scene so dearly.
It's so good. Like, you almost never go to a restaurant that is not delicious in Portland.
Yeah, like my joke has kind of been like, you can basically like stub your toe on good food or coffee. It's just like you just start walking down the street and like your baseline for coffee or food excellence is just so high. Mm-hmm. That if you could walk in somewhere and like this be much better than what you're getting in my case, south of Nashville. So all that to say, I don't want to completely make this about Portland. I have a lot of questions about what you're up to at Chili Piper. So you're currently product marketing manager at Chili Piper. But mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, you came up through content marketing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Could you paint a bit of a picture of like how you made that jump from content to PMM?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when I started at Chili Piper, one of the things that they did when they onboarded me is they asked me what kinds of content that I loved writing. And so my boss at the time, Chelsea Castle, she gave me a list of like all different types of content. And I really liked like doing the website. I love doing product explainer videos. I love customer stories. I loved like product use cases, anything that kind of gets into the product. And the things I didn't really like was like blog posts, SEO, social media, those kinds of things. And so I was having this discussion with her and she's like, sounds like you don't really like most of content marketing. So as I was working at Chili Piper, I kind of tried to take ownership of things that were considered more under the product marketing realm. Like there was this website migration project that opened up. So I was working on that. And then I just slowly kind of gravitated towards it. And then when there was an opening on the team, I was kind of the first person that came to mind to fill that gap.
Yeah. That's so funny. Because I feel like when I think of content marketing, I typically reach for and think of all the things you just described that you don't like. yeah. as much. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, that's content marketing over there. And it's like, right. oh yeah, well, writing an explainer, that's PMM, right? Or writing this blog that goes into the weeds, or the support article that goes into the weeds on this product, like that's PMM. So it's funny that you had those kind of like early indicators that you might actually be a product marketer.
Right.
Do you feel like, having landed in the role now, do you feel like that content background has influenced or changed how you do product marketing?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, I think it's really a strength in product marketing to come from that content background, because so much, like a lot of content marketing is talking to someone and like taking their like convoluted ideas, like they're going on and on for 45 minutes about like some random stuff, and you take that and you turn it into a blog post that makes sense. So a lot of product marketing is that, like you're talking to sales, you're talking to customer success, you're talking to product, you're talking to your customers, you're talking to all kinds of people, and there's so many inputs, and you have to take that and like turn it into something that makes sense. So having all of that experience from the content side is really helpful. And just as far as how it's changed how I do product marketing, I think I kind of gravitate towards making sure the words are right, like making sure it sounds right, making sure it's clear, making sure, like I spend a lot of time like writing and rewriting and making sure things are clear and tweaking and that kind of like clarity aspect of product marketing. And also on the research side. So I love, like in content marketing, you do a lot of research, you do a lot of reading, listening to different calls, talking to people, and product marketing is the same. So I love listening to gong calls. I love like talking to reps, digging into the product, like the research side of stuff is really fun.
Yeah. That's super interesting to me, because I think there are a lot of product marketers who skew a bit more strategic. And the result is they'll think about positioning, or they'll think about messaging, but they don't always take it that last mile from like, here's the, all the strategy to like, here's literally what you could put on a landing page, or here's like the exact copy that you could put in the hero or whatever it may be. And I imagine those content chops are really helpful to say like, oh, I'm not just giving strategy up to this point, but like the last mile, like here's explicit recommendations for how to kind of get it there.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because the way that I always approach messaging and positioning and like telling a story is I always start with something tangible. I'm like, okay, so if we're going to write this, how would we write it on a landing page? So I start with the landing page, writing a landing page, and then I go back and create the messaging doc from that. Like I start with the actual thing that we're going to do, and then I create like the rules and the like the messaging doc around that.
See, I've gotten in trouble for that, but I 100% think that's the way to go.
Because like, what is it going to look like? What are we going to actually say? Yeah.
Well, because even too, like it sort of works out the kinks, because like you think like, oh, this messaging is going to work. And it's like, actually, it's way too long to put into an actual product page, or it actually doesn't work. It doesn't translate the same way you thought it was going to translate when it's written on this asset. And that's the only thing someone sees.
Like four lines long. It's too like, it's not going to work on our landing page. Like we need to make it shorter and more concise.
No, I think that's actually a really good process, because I think PMMs often are just kind of shelling out documents rather than like, here's a wireframe, or here's exactly what it would look like. And I don't know. I think there's a case to be made for that approach.
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
Now, in my mind, Chili Piper is a place of product marketing legend, in that you've had I didn't coin this term. I think the We're Not Marketers boys coined this term, but the godfather of PMM with Jason Oakley, Logan Hendrickson, who was my last guest on this podcast, is former Chili Piper, and you. And I've been following you for about a year, and I have like consistently loved your takes, love the way you think about PMM, and I have a lot of questions. So, if I remember correctly, Chili Piper just went through some new positioning, right? And this is where like my questions come in, because anytime a company is such a clear leader in one category and they have to change their positioning, I'm interested in how they make that hurdle. And so I'll tell you from the outside my assessment, and maybe this isn't accurate internally. From the outside, Chili Piper's positioning was so clear, in part because for so long, y'all zeroed in on kind of the scheduling product where you basically dominated the whole like demo routing category for SaaS. Like that was what Chili Piper was known for. We make it really easy for a prospect to book a demo and get on your calendar. None of that back and forth. Like that's what you guys kind of dominated. That said, the product has gotten a lot more complicated since then. And like how I know it needs new positioning is like, I don't know all the other stuff that Chili Piper does. Like, I know that you guys do that. So I'd be curious from your perspective, when did you know it was time for Chili Piper to take on new positioning?
Yeah. So I love that, because that's exactly kind of what our problem is. Like, the thing that we did really well was also our problem. So I kind of paint the picture as like, there's stages of awareness for Chili Piper. Like, first stage is unaware. Second stage is people are like, oh, Chili Piper is like really cool. They've got a pepper logo. I don't know what they do, but they're a cool brand.
Pepper conscious. Stage. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe it's like a Calendly kind of like scheduling. And the fourth is like, you are at the fourth stage of enlightenment. That's pretty good. Like, you know, we do demo form booking, something on the getting speed to lead. And the fifth is like true enlightenment, where they know we have this full suite of products. And almost nobody was on full enlightenment. Like, most people were chilling at fourth stage at most. And most people didn't know we had this full suite of products. And at the same time, in around, I think 2022 is when we started talking about this. And that's kind of when tech started to tank. There's lots of like budget cuts, layoffs. Yeah. People are being pushed to consolidate their tech stack. Consolidate the tech, you got to consolidate tech. So even if people were consolidating towards a less good Chili Piper, it didn't matter, because procurement told them that they needed to cut costs, consolidate their tech. So the repositioning was really, it was a company-wide effort, and it started on the product side. So we first started by getting our lead routing product, which is kind of like, if you have eBooks or webinars or whatever, and you need to distribute those leads to reps. So people who aren't quite ready to book a meeting, but are still kind of in your orbit, then you would use our distro product. And then we also started developing chat as like a direct competitor to Drift and Qualified's offering. So we had, on the product side, we had this like consolidated suite of products, where essentially you can consolidate all of your routing, all of your scheduling, all of your meetings into one place. So we had it on the product side. And then we were trying to think about how to actually go about marketing this. How to position it, how to talk about it. And so we got all the revenue leaders together, lots and lots of brainstorming sessions. And again, like, if you don't have like sales buy-in, products buy-in, the CEO's buy-in, like, you need everyone's buy-in to make a positioning project work. And we had buy-in from everyone. Everyone is like, okay, we need to reposition. We need to rethink about this. And we kind of started from like, so we knew from the product side that that was our clear advantage, is that nobody consolidated chat, lead routing, scheduling, and form scheduling. Like, nobody else did that. But like, how do we talk about it? So we were like, okay, from the concierge, like, people know that we're good at converting demand into pipeline. Like, people know that you come to your website, they fill out a form, they book a demo, and then they can get you to sales as soon as possible. We're making it easier for people to take that demand that marketing's creating and turn it into sales pipeline. And then we were like, oh, we actually do this for all of our products. Like, with chat, they're converting website visitors into pipeline. With distro, you're converting like webinar attendees into pipeline. With handoff, you're converting like cold calls or cold emails into pipeline. So everything that we're doing is about converting marketing demand into pipeline. So that's how we came up with the demand conversion platform. Yeah.
Okay. See, I love that journey. And I think the stages of enlightenment you described is very much like, I could plot myself on stage. What I think you said, stage four.
You're in stage four
of that journey. Like, somewhere along the way, I clicked over from like, oh, you guys are like Calendly light, right? Yeah. To be like, actually, no, it's more sophisticated than that. And it's because I was like setting up demo forms at a startup and like, okay. So I learned that when you don't have Chili Piper, things are actually more complicated. And I think that journey makes a lot of sense to me. I'm curious, what did testing look like with customers? Did you guys have any sort of conversations with customers, or like, you talked about that pattern you saw emerge of demand conversion. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that was something that customers immediately were understanding, or was there some education required? I'm curious, like, what were the learnings there?
So from the customer standpoint, I think people kind of see the landscape in terms of the different solutions that exist on the landscape. So we're trying to create the term of demand conversion platform. We're converting your demand into pipeline. But I think for customers, they're thinking about it in terms of like getting their leads from marketing into sales. So we're kind of like trying to rebrand that terminology. So when we have our page, like the demand conversion platform page on our website, and I think we do something that's a little bit out of the box, I guess. I think a lot of other companies, they kind of shy away from talking about competitors or putting competitors on your page or like mentioning it, that they exist at all. It's kind of like, you kind of want to paint the picture that you like exist in a vacuum and no competitors exist outside of your, you like, but I think because our customers think about us in terms of the market, like when customers are looking at which solution to purchase, they're competitors that they're looking at. So we kind of like, paint the picture of like the old way of doing things is you have like, I don't know, maybe like a Lean Data or something for lead routing, a Drift for chat, like email scheduling, you have Calendly, and then you have Chili Piper for form routing. And like, you're trying to mix these all together. You're trying to make them connect together and make it work. And it's very messy. It's very annoying. And so with Chili Piper, you consolidate all of those. So that the way that we did our positioning is one, we have the pretty marketing words, demand conversion platform. A very tangible, like, this is the solutions that you might be using now. And these are the solutions, like, it can eliminate essentially all of the solutions if you consolidate with Chili Piper. So I don't really think knocking your competitors is the way to go. Like, it's not a good look to be like, I don't think knocking your competitors is the way to go. But when people are thinking about what tool to buy, they're thinking about it in context of other people. So helping them find the right tool for them is kind of like bringing your competitors into the position, into the conversation and talking about like what tech exists.
Yeah. Well, I think the difference there too, and this is what I sort of like about what you just described, is there is a difference between bashing your competitors and simply describing the way that users interact with your competitor and pointing out that there might be a gap there. Because it sounds like you guys described, you talked about Drift, Calendly, forgetting the last one you said, but you described it in a way where it's not like you, oh, this is libel. You're saying something that people don't do that with Calendly. That's not what they're for. You described what they did. And then you just raised this question of, all right, this is the typical behavior that of how someone engages with all these competitors. Is there a better way to do this? And that was the way you positioned it against competitors rather than saying, oh, like Drift is bad at this or Calendly is bad at that. Like if you can name a thread in behavior and then position against that behavior, that seems like a really smart way to position against competitors rather than like a smear campaign.
It's more about like helping people understand what solution makes the most sense for them. Like Calendly is a great solution for a lot of people. Like we're not trying to bash Calendly, but like some people would do better with Chili Piper. So like it's not about like telling you why everyone else sucks. It's just about like helping people find the solution that makes the most sense for them.
Yeah. And it makes sense to go to a platform play if all your eggs were in the scheduling basket and then people are looking at consolidation and they say, well, hey, sorry, our account managers are using Calendly and then account executives are using Chili Piper. We're going to cut Chili Piper and we're just going to do Calendly. It makes you more vulnerable to losing wallet share in that sort of consolidation effort versus the shift to a platform that has these other strings of capability tied to it. That makes a lot of sense. Now, I think that reposition is really admirable. And one thing I've noticed a lot of times with platform positioning, just in general, is I'm not saying you guys did all in one, but you lean towards a platform. And a lot of times like platform positioning is like where good positioning goes to die. It's often bland. It's often not super specific. So I'm curious, like how did you guys manage to switch that positioning and change that positioning for Chili Piper without losing the clarity and the specificity? Because I think that sort of was, as you hinted at, like based on those four stages of enlightenment, it was clear that scheduling and lead routing was what Chili Piper did best. Were there any considerations you had to take to like kind of like keep that clarity while still moving to that platform play?
It's really, really tricky. It's very easy to have that clarity when you have just one product and you're describing what that product does. So you go to someone's website, H1 is like, this is what the product does. Like for us, it was like double your inbound conversions. Like it's four words. It describes what our product does. And underneath it's like follow our route and schedule people from your web form. Like very easy to understand. But now we've got
it's great copy. Yeah.
Yeah. Very easy, very short. Like you get it. There's like a visual next to it. Like you get it right away. But now we have the four different products plus a scheduling. So like plus our just email scheduling. So technically five different products. It's very tricky. So that's why we kind of have this old way, new way map where we say, in the old way, these are the different tools that you could be using. Like you could be using Lean Data for lead routing, you have Drift for chat, you have Calendly for email scheduling. This is kind of what you might be doing now. And then the new way is that Chili Paper consolidates all of those. So we're banking that people kind of understand the market already and understand the main value props of our competitors and using that knowledge to inform like what Chili Paper can do as a platform. But definitely like the H1 on the homepage is very tricky to get exactly, like to describe exactly what your product does in three words, you know?
Yeah. I've come to have, so I've recently moved into a company about 6 months ago that has more of a platform, and that is like what we offer. And I've realized it is so much harder to write positioning and messaging for a platform than it is for an individual product.
Yeah.
Like versus my last company was like a very much an individual product. And I have a healthy dose of respect for that challenge.
Like you have, it's like qualify route and schedule meetings from any inbound or outbound channel. So it still describes what we do, but it's like much wordier. And I don't think you can really immediately understand it. If you have no context and that's the only sentence you have, I think it's challenging.
Yeah. Well, I respect it. I think it's been a job well done. I'm sure there'll be a lot of iterations over the next couple months, but that was like the big hurdle was from lead routing to this broader platform. That's big. Now, something else I really want to pick your brain on has been transparent pricing. So I really love that Chili Paper has kind of gone all in on transparent pricing. And so much so that your new pricing page is very cool. I shared it in my team's PMM chat, I think Friday, and said, hey, if you need some product marketing inspiration, Chili Piper's new pricing page is, I think I did like fire emoji, and everyone responded with like little chili emojis. So just know that's what happens. And that, I think what I love about it is that someone can land there and get clear on what they want and know exactly what they would pay. Like it's an actual pricing page, which is crazy that you have to say that because many pricing pages, including my own companies, much to my chagrin, like you don't actually know the pricing when you land there. Now, looking at it, the trained product marketing eye knows that's like a ton of work. So I'd be curious, why has Chili Paper become so adamant about transparent pricing, enough so to do that sort of work?
Right. So we've always been very adamant about transparent pricing. We have a very, very strict no discount policy. Like everyone, all of our customers pay exactly the same price, regardless if you have 2 licenses or 20,000 licenses, if we have the same investors, if you do a customer story with us, like whatever it is, we don't do discounts. Everyone pays the same price.
Much easier. Like painful, but easier. Like once you make that jump.
Exactly. So we wrote an article about why we did this. If you Google Chili Paper, no discounts, I think you can find the article. But the TLDR is that, one, we wanted to make it easy as possible for buyers to inform themselves prior to the call. So we want people to self-qualify themselves out if they can't afford us. Like if your budget for calendar solutions is like $50 a year, Chili Paper is not it. Like we want you to be able to look at it, kind of get like a ballpark, like understand what the pricing is before you go into a sales call to decide even if a sales call makes sense.
Yeah.
And 2, it's shorter sales cycles. We don't discount, so we eliminate all of the back and forth negotiations. Like it's as simple. No, I'm sorry, we don't do discounts. Here's an article about why. And that's it. So it's really interesting because a lot of people think that discounts is kind of the impetus that closes more deals at the end of the month, end of the quarter. You have those end of the quarter, like 15% off pushes, like whatever. You have all of those pushes that happen at the end of the month. But there's actually in that article, there's a screenshot of our sales force. And at the end of the month, end of the quarter, we also have those spikes.
Like we also have the spikes.
We still have like spikes of like more deals closed at the end of the quarter, end of the month, even though we don't do like end of the quarter specials or whatever. So,
That's super interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would have assumed more of a flat line of like maybe a generally higher flat line.
No,
it's, maybe that's just because it's so buyer behavior. Like people are just used to like pulling, like getting budget approved or pulling the trigger end of month.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like rep focus where like, they really need to make quota. So they really like go hard the last week. Yeah. I'm not really sure. I'm not sure what
that's
it is.
True. Reps. Yeah. There is no person more motivated than a rep at the end of the quarter.
Yeah, exactly.
Truly. So like, that could be it. Yeah. I'm curious, Did that accidentally sort of reinforce your guys' positioning, like doing business that way? Because this is not, I don't know if this is in your copy, but a lot of what it seems like Chili Piper is trying to do is take the friction out of the demo and buying experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I almost like wonder, did that reinforce like a reputation of not only do we build products that do that and we operate that way, or was were those two at all linked, or yeah, maybe consciously, subconsciously? Part of,
like, our overall company philosophy is to make the buying process easier for people. So that kind of is across the way that we do business in general. So one, we don't do discounts. We always demo on the first call. We have like there's different things that we have that just, we try to make the buying process as easy as possible. So we sell a software that makes it easier. And then also internally we adopt those principles.
Yeah. You're telling me you don't want to be on a discovery call where you don't get to see the product and then schedule a time to talk about the product? You don't want two calls that could have been one?
Absolutely not. No discovery calls for us. So if you want to take a demo, no discovery calls. You get to see the product right away.
Yeah, that's a noble mission.
15-minute sales deck before the demo. It's like we have two slides. They have like two slides that they share and then they get ready.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
Now, I think a lot of us, myself included, can glamorize transparent pricing. And because you just named a lot of really great benefits of transparent pricing, like a quicker sales cycle, you're making a better experience for your customers. Like there's overall, I think from a revenue model, it's much more predictable if there's not that variable of discounting. Like there's a lot there that I think is super compelling. Like in myself, I've petitioned for transparent pricing at a few companies and was only successful at one. And you've told me a bunch of the pros that kind of drove the Chili team to opt for that. But I know that there are also plenty of cons, or I have a hunch that there's got to be cons. Maybe there's not, and you'll say, no, it's bliss. So I'd be curious, what are some of the downsides, if any, to fully embracing transparent pricing or kind of making that jump?
It gets a lot more complex the more complex your offering is. So if you have one product and it's like $15 per user per month or something, that's really easy. Like you put it on a website, call it a day, like $15 per user per month, transparent pricing. But the more complex it gets, the more difficult it gets. So we have 5 different products. We have one add-on in addition to that. And one of them is free with the other products. And then on top of that, the more products you bundle, the less you pay per product. So it's like $30 per user per month for one. And then if you buy all of them, it's $18 per user per month. So it gets really, really complicated though. And then we also have scaled pricing. So if you have like 10,000 users, it's like less expensive per user as you go. It's like, it gets very, very complicated the more nuances you add in. But as you're entering these competitive deal cycles with other competitors and they can undercut you on price, we needed to have some kind of a system that made our pricing more compelling and more in line with what our competitors were doing on one-off discounts. But that was also fully transparent. So we want to have a price that's fair and reasonable for customers in light of the competitive landscape. But we needed to have that was transparent and scalable across everyone. So that's where it got really, really complex. We did lots and lots of ugly sketches, like on my paper on Figma, like trying to figure out how to visualize this. It's tricky.
That's interesting because I think a lot of times, I mean, something that's clicking for me right now is that discounts can become kind of a lazy way to compensate for a pricing model that, as the product grows, becomes less compelling. Like that's sort of what you described. Like you start tacking on all of these things and the product does get more expensive and you have to think about how do you incentivize it against someone who can just come in and say, well, hey, I got the okay from my manager and I can give you this exclusive, that whole, I went and talked to my manager, a weird play, and wanting a model that is transparent, that is confident in the value of the product. Like something I even said to my boss is like, you can only do this if you have product market fit. Like it's a clear sign of product market fit, but having something that can hold water and still be compelling when it's for an enterprise customer and when someone has tacked on a lot of subscriptions or they want to grow or and it's not like that entry level sort of point. I think that's super interesting. I closely related to this. Then I imagine, did you have to do a significant amount of repackaging?
Yeah.
Like thinking about how, what bundles together, what doesn't, what the tiers are of like, once you hear this, clear this threshold, the pricing changes. Like, did you have to rework all of that to build? I mean, I think about the calculator you guys have. That thing is really impressive and has a lot of math happening. Yeah. Did you have to repackage to make that work?
We did a little bit, yeah. So we introduced our new product, Chat. And with the introduction of that new product, we had to think about how we would fit things together. And it was a lot of thinking about the right way to do. We did a survey with our closed loss customers, current customers, and prospects, I think it was. It was those three categories. And we asked them, like, do you use these solutions, like lead routing, form scale? Like, do you use these different solutions? Would you use them together to try to understand what solutions people have? Do they use them together? Is there like any appetite for like bundling different products together? So we were thinking, did we want to do like custom bundles, like a chat bundle and then like a lead routing bundle, like do like custom bundles like that? Or did we want to do like change it to tiered pricing to have like good, better, best situation?
Yeah.
Or do like what we did, what we ended up doing is having products that you can like more of an a la carte situation, like you can buy them all one off and then you can add together. The more you add, the less expensive it gets. So there's a lot of different thinking that went into it. And the way that we decided, I think it works, like the byproduct, you bundle it together, it gets less expensive. But I think in general, transparent pricing is a lot easier if you have the good, better, best model. And then you just have to think about what features fit into which tier rather than like trying to figure out five different products plus an add-on plus it, like trying to figure out like five different products and how they all work together. Yeah.
Yeah. I can see how good, better, best would make for an easier transparent pricing model. Cause then you basically just put three buckets.
It's three.
And a lot of times
Yeah.
And a lot of times you see four buckets where it's like the semi-transparent pricing page where like they'll have then an enterprise one that's like contact sales.
Right.
And I could see how that's an easier path overall. I'm curious then, in terms of how customers grow with you, does not having the good, because the drawback to good, better, best is whenever a customer starts bumping up against those thresholds of like, actually, I kind of want this, they have to go into this whole new mini deal cycle. Is Chili Piper set up to where if a customer wants to grow and they want to add new users, that's like low or no touch because you don't have those different product tiers. It's just tacking on, I'm assuming, more users or tacking on a new area of the product. Does that eliminate that friction later by having that friction up front?
Totally. Yeah. So if you buy Concierge with us and you want to add on like 100 new users, you just like, you can add it in app, like you can add it in the app. Or like if it's a lot more users, you just reach out to your account manager and then they'll add it for you. There's no like, oh, well, that means that you're going to be at the higher tier. So like there's none of that conversation. And then for cross-sell opportunities, it's just finding new use cases that align with the different products that we have that address a completely different side of routing. So it's more about like, does this product make sense? Do you need this? Like, and then it's adding on that product rather than adding on like all these extra features in a new tiering
model. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you see a la carte so rarely.
Yeah.
And I think it's because my read is it's complicated.
Yes.
And it's actually hard to feature gate too. A lot of times I've been in companies where the product is not coded in a way where you can feature gate that way.
Right.
And so like there's a foundational like product strategy you have to get clear on to even build a pricing model that works that way. And that has that kind of feature gating so you can package separately.
It was really tricky for us to find examples of other companies that do like a product a la carte model. Like Jira, like Atlassian is one.
If you look
at their pricing page, it's also quite, it's quite complicated. Yeah.
Okay, great. I'll have to go nerd out on that one later.
But it makes it more complicated.
I really like though that it avoids, because I think the biggest objection you'll see with a good, better, best model is a lot of times you'll see someone who's like, right on the cusp of meeting that next thing. And they're like, well, I just want this one thing and I don't want to pay X amount more just because I don't need all this other stuff. And it's almost like you're trying to force them to be a good fit for your packaging when they're not actually a good fit for your packaging, maybe today. And I like that a la carte kind of eliminates that pressure to squish someone into a box.
Yeah, that's something that our CEO Nicola talks about a lot. Is he doesn't want to create shelfware for our customers. It's like where you're buying something, and there's a bunch of features or that you're not using as part of it. So that's kind of why we wanted to go with the product like a la carte approach, where you buy a product because you need that product. You need that. It solves a use case for you, and you're using like at least 50% of the features within that product. Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, I think that's incredibly common with platforms, particularly if selling the platform is the go-to-market motion. If they don't have any sort of real like, oh, you can buy just this product or upgrade to a platform. Like I've worked at companies where it's like, we sell the platform. That's what we sell. Yeah. That's basically what my company does. And what the result is, a lot of times you end up with, I like that use of shelfware. I've never heard that term. Mm-hmm. That's a good term. But these areas of the product that are just like untouched. And to me, it's like churn waiting to happen.
Right.
Because someone comes in with something more niche and more more specialized to that customer. And then they're just going to take them out from under you because they know they're overpaying or buying something they don't need.
Right. Totally.
Okay. So I didn't prep you for this, but I want to ask you this. Are you the only product marketer at Chili Piper?
Yes, I am. It's just me.
The only one. That's amazing. Like
you mentioned the godfather of product marketing, Jason Oakley. He does consulting with us. So we get him for a couple hours a week.
Love that. Okay. Yeah. But still, I think Chili Piper has made such a massive market footprint to only have one product marketer in-house. So good on you. And five products. Like that's a lot to manage. What's your product marketer to product manager ratio?
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's me, the only product marketer, and we have five product managers.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. I'm glad that they're, so we kind of divvy things up a little bit differently. So they're responsible for the roadmap for their own products. And they're also do those, the feature comparisons between us and competitors. And I take that and I turn it into more like messaging. Like I think about how we can position ourselves against competitors, but they do the feature research and understand that aspect a little bit more. But it's a lot. It's a lot of products.
Yeah.
And market. Yeah.
I'm thinking about that. Then are you then with those five products, are you typically doing kind of launches where you'll try to piecemeal a couple of the features that are coming together into a narrative and like launch it? Or are you doing more like continuous mini launches most of the time?
Yeah, I'm trying to do more of the former, like taking what different products are doing and creating kind of cohesive message and doing kind of monthly little pushes, monthly launches. And then we do just like a feature release to customers, just like here's everything that came out this month, these last 2 weeks. Because they're a little bit siloed on the product management side. So I'm kind of take everything that's happening for each product and figure out what we're going to market and how we're going to market it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, honestly, kudos to you. That's a massive amount of work. I think on the one hand, I like the simplicity of being able to kind of be the source. All right, you're routing in all these product innovations and you get to kind of make a plan where you kind of direct them together. But with that comes a lot of work. So I just, good on you for making as much of a market footprint as you have as its PMM team of one. One and a third, if you include Jason, or not even a third, a couple hours a week.
One and a couple hours from Jason.
Yeah. That's amazing. Well, Madeline, thank you so much for making the time to make this happen. I feel like there's a lot more that we could have nerded out on, but this was super helpful, even in my thinking about transparent pricing. If folks want to just keep up with you, follow what you're doing at Chili Piper, what's the best way to do that?
I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so you can just find me on LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Madeline Work on there.
Amazing. All right. Well, thank you so much. It was good chatting with you.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
For everyone still tuned in, Thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Back again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.